Progressive Voice of Minnesota, Brett and Hunter, on your Tuesday afternoon. Glad to have you with us. Did you know it is Giving Tuesday today? So hopefully if you have any charities out there you'd like to give money to, you're giving money to them. But would like to point out, again, Minnesota being ahead of the curve, Giving Tuesday only started in 2012, while the local Give to the Max Day started back in 2009. So credit to Minnesota, again, being ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm. Give to the Max Day was a couple days ago.
Yeah, that's usually first or second. I forgot which day of the week. Is it Thursday in November,
yeah,
I think?
It was a Thursday.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
It was last Thursday.
Yeah, it's usually a week or two before Thanksgiving, but thought I'd point that out, that we invented those big charitable givings day before the nation actually did, or before the rest of the nation, that is. But Giving Tuesday is indeed today. So later on in the program, if you have any charities you're giving to, feel free to give them a plug here on AM 950. We'll take your calls a little bit later on. But first, immigration has been a major part of the news cycle this past week. Started over the weekend when images surfaced of migrant children getting tear gassed at the Tijuana border. It's led to outrage from the left and some really odd justifications, I would say, from those on the right. There's been developments today with reports of a desert detention camp that's housing thousands of teen immigrants, as well as the Trump administration waiving rigorous background checks for all the staff that works at those places. So all in all, kind of an ugly situation taking place at the border right now. But joining us to sort out what is happening along the border is Phil Wolgan. He is the Managing Director for Immigration Policy at the Center for American Progress. Hey, Phil, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you with us today. And well, first up, before we get into some of the meat of the issues, I want to talk about some of these myths or maybe misleading statements that have been made by the right in terms of this immigration controversy. And one of the arguments I've heard a lot of conservatives make is that, well, the Obama administration also sanctioned tear-gassing immigrants. Is this a true statement or misleading in any way?
Well, that's certainly, I think, far worse than versions of this than I've heard from the right. I mean, no, this is certainly not true. There were certainly responses from the Obama administration to the uptick in asylum seekers from Central America in 2014. That probably wouldn't have been what I would have suggested. Prime among those would be the ramping up of family detention. But all in all, what we're seeing from the Trump administration, certainly tear gassing children, probably the most flagrant version of this, but what we're seeing is really both in tenor and in size just vastly different than anything we've seen before from any administration.
Well, another argument we've heard conservatives make is that the immigrants were throwing rocks at border agents, therefore it basically justified them tear gassing them. Is this true, or is like a false equivalency? Well, what do you make of this kind of ridiculous argument I've heard?
Well, look, I mean, obviously I wasn't there, so I can't say for sure what happened. But I will say that the Border Patrol has a long history of using excessive and at times lethal force against people on the other side of the border, so not even, you know, right next to them, and really doing harm. And so to think that, you know, a bunch of women and children in a really chaotic situation require armed troops to fire on them, that seems pretty unlikely to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also agree. Well, this is another big issue that I think is kind of getting blown over by a lot of people, in that we were throwing this tear gas technically on Mexican soil. And isn't that a pretty 100%. Major international, I don't know what kind of violation would be, but that seems like a pretty big deal, because if we had Mexican authorities throwing tear gas on technically the U.S. side of the border, I would imagine there would be quite a bit of outrage.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, this is definitely a human rights violation all around, and it is, I think, fairly stunning that we're not hearing more about that, let alone, again, just the fact that you have pictures of children as young as toddlers running from tear gas. I mean, that's just horrific.
So we've also heard the argument that, well, conservatives and even some people on the left are for what's called, well, quote-unquote, legal immigration. And right now they say our vetting process is broken. What exactly is the vetting process when it comes to immigration and also people seeking asylum?
Yeah, great questions. I mean, let me just start with incredible hypocrisy of saying that you want people to come legally when these are literally people that are showing up at a port of entry to go through the legal process of requesting asylum, right? These are people that are doing what they should be doing and are instead being met with ports of entry that are closed, being told you can't actually claim asylum, or, you know, in the most extreme, being met with tear gas. But in terms of the process, look, we have a process in place, and that is if you come to a border, or even if you don't, if you just enter and you turn yourself into a Border Patrol agent and you say, look, I've got a fear of going back to my country, I think I'll be harmed or even killed, then you go through a process, right? Mm-hmm. You pass an initial screening of whether the agent thinks, yep, there's a chance you might be harmed if we return you to your country. And then from there, you get to make your case in front of an immigration judge. And if you win your case, if you're found to have what's known as a well-founded fear of persecution, then you get to stay. And if you don't, then you don't. I mean, this is a system that we have that works. We're talking about just a few thousand people in a country of 312 million people here. You know, we can process these people. But what we're seeing from the Trump administration is the opposite. They've taken this system and just squeezed it so that we're only processing maybe 30 or 40 people at the ports of entry a day. And so instead you see just thousands of people backed up waiting in Tijuana, and it's just chaos.
Well, one of the arguments and justifications we've heard from the Trump administration on why they're doing this is that there's, well, a lot of, quote, bad people that are trying to get into the country that are among these immigrants and asylum seekers. Do we have any stats on if any of these people are actually criminals, or is this kind of something that he's just making up on the fly?
Sure. I mean, my sense of it is almost certainly the latter. All the news reports I've seen say that the DHS internal information is that there aren't, to take some of the things the president has said, Middle Easterners, there aren't actual criminals. You know, these are people generally fleeing really awful conditions in places like Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala, people that have made the decision that it is better to take this incredibly dangerous journey through Mexico to the U.S. border than it is to stay where they are. And I think that really tells you something about the type of people they are and just how bad conditions are in their home countries.
Yeah, and Trump also said today, quote, why is a parent running up to an area where they know that tear gas is forming and it's going to be formed, and they are running up with a child? What's your response to what Trump is saying, that it's actually the parents' fault for putting their children in danger?
Well, I mean, first of all, I don't think anybody expected that armed troops were going to fire tear gas at families. So I think to put the onus on parents rather than on the Border Patrol for an incredibly excessive response is just crazy. But, you know, what really gets me going about this is, again, if you go back to all these people who say, well, we just want people to do it legally, to come legally, et cetera, what the Trump administration is doing by limiting the number of people who can come and actually request asylum at a port to just, you know, a trickle of people a day, what they're doing is basically telling people the only way to do this is to try to, you know, get in a different way. That's not what we should be doing. We should be sending people to the ports of entry, having their claims heard. Again, if you win your case, you get to stay. If not, you go home. But, you know, to blame parents for that is just, I think, putting the blame in the wrong place is the nicest way I can put it.
So a few minutes ago, we were talking about how lots of these asylum seekers are coming from gang and war-ravaged parts of Central America. Looking at the history of this, did the U.S. government play a role in destabilizing this region in the first place? Because I kind of get the feeling that it's almost, if we broke it, don't we have to kind of fix it as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. And, you know, in many ways, this is kind of history repeating itself again and again. You know, you can go back 30, 40 years of times when we've had flows from Central America that the U.S. has mostly ignored, or that the U.S. has met with a security response that often just helps prop up leaders in the countries that aren't doing anything to make their countries safer. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, we do have responsibility, not just because we broke it, but also because if we actually want to solve this problem in a real way, that can't happen at the U.S. border. That can't happen just by closing down the border, right? That has to happen with investments in places like Honduras and El Salvador, building up their judiciary, helping, you know, anti-corruption efforts with their police force, all the kind of things that are going to make it safer for people to stay. So even if you don't want to argue the historical value in making these investments, it's just sound policy for right now.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Phil Walgan. He is the Managing Director for Immigration at the Center for American Progress. So I want to switch gears to something that popped up in the Associated Press today, and they are reporting that, well, there was supposed to be a temporary shelter for up to 360 migrant children that has now expanded to housing for over 2,300 children and has been operating now for months and kind of looks like it's going to be operating indefinitely. What do we know about this facility, and what circumstances are forcing children to be sent to this place?
Yeah, I think this is a great question. So you're talking about the Tornillo facility in the Texas desert. It's just a massive, massive tent facility. So, you know, open air tents in the Texas desert. At least it's not midsummer when temperatures really get up, you know, well past 100. But this is a camp that, you know, for all intents and purposes, shouldn't be there, right? We have a series of fixed shelters all across the country to deal with unaccompanied kids, so kids who show up at the border by themselves, who get special care because they're kids and they need to be protected. What the Trump administration has done is stop what had been general policy for so many years, or at least slow down this general policy, of after kids are in shelter care for a short amount of time, they're released to a parent, to a family member, to a relative, somebody who will take care of them, cover their costs, look after them until they get their hearing to make a case for asylum. Instead, the Trump administration has basically ground that release process to a halt. And because they no longer have enough beds to hold these kids, who are now being held for much longer, they're held in this, you know, really terrible facility. The news that came out today is just that they are not doing any of the type of background checks that would be necessary in any other scenario for people who work with kids. But even before that, we knew that this facility, for example, doesn't have educational facilities. So school-age children aren't actually getting any type of education. This just shouldn't be happening, and it's another example of how the Trump administration is just creating chaos rather than actual solutions.
Yeah, and you were talking about how this nonprofit that's running this facility is basically able to sidestep a lot of mental health requirements that's usually required by the federal government. What are these requirements that they're being allowed to skip, and, well, what concerns should we have?
Sure. I mean, I think there are a few. One, certainly the background checks. You know, who knows who's coming to these facilities, right? These are you know, remote. This is a remote facility. It's not exactly, I'm sure, the most prime place. You want to make sure, for example, that there are no registered sex offenders. And there are also, I think, rules about how many, for example, mental health practitioners there are for every number of kids. This has nowhere near the number of practitioners that should be there. And again, the kind of lack of actual education. So, I mean, this is just kind of a sampling of the issues. It's just not the kind of thing that I would certainly want for my child, and I think any American would want for their child. And I think that's really what we're talking about here. It's you know, proper care of children.
Yeah, it almost just seems like they're being institutionalized without really committing any sort of crime. And, of course, that can have all sorts of negative impacts on your child's development.
100%. And, you know, immigration law as a whole has a number of provisions that are specific to children that recognize the specific vulnerabilities of children in the system. The reason that we're, in theory, these kids are supposed to be in shelters and not jails is because of those laws. And yet we have this Tornillo facility that, frankly, is starting to look a lot more penal than shelter.
Mm-hmm. So what kinds of costs are the shelters putting on the taxpayers, and would there be a more cost-effective way we could process some of these migrant children and even immigrants in general?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the cost of bed space at the Tornillo facility is significantly more expensive than the regular shelter bed space where kids are held. So I think the estimates I've seen are about $430 million since the Tornillo facility opened a few months ago. But, you know, we're talking about, I think, about four times more expensive to house a child here rather than in regular shelter bed space. But what's even cheaper than that is releasing children to a family member, as the Trump administration is supposed to be doing. In that case, you've got families and communities who then can take on the responsibilities, pay for the costs of you know, clothing, feeding, et cetera, these children, rather than that being something that the federal government takes on. It's just something that really just does not make sense.
Yeah, and maybe you're not the person to answer this question, but what is their justification for doing this? Because that makes all the sense in the world to me. Release them to a relative that's in the country currently.
Yeah, I mean, look, like you said, I am definitely not the exact right person, but I do think their overall strategy has been this idea that we have to keep people incarcerated for as long as they can as a form of deterrent to try to stop children and families from coming to the border. We've done a bunch of work here at the Center for American Progress showing that these type of deterrents, whether that's detention or family separation, don't actually work and don't do anything to stop people from coming. But again and again, that seems to be the justification that the Trump administration has used.
Well, we've been speaking with Phil Wolgen. He is the Managing Director for Immigration Policy at the Center for American Progress. We unfortunately are up against the clock, but Phil, thanks so much for taking some time out of your day to update us on the situation. It's a tough issue for me to follow since I'm no expert on this, but I really appreciate you bringing some perspective on this issue.
Yeah, no problem. Always happy to.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Phil. AM 950, Progressive Voice of Minnesota. If you have any thoughts on this issue, give us a call, 952-946-6205. On the other side of the break, I'm going to dive into, well, some of the history we've had with interfering in lots of these Central American countries and whether we have a responsibility to help some of these people out after we broke their country. We'll talk about that next on AM 950.
Hi, this is Paul Metza inviting all of you out there in AM 950 land to listen to my radio show, The Wall of Power Radio Hour, every weekend on AM 950. We feature musicians, actors, politicians, homicide cops, record stores, Metza walkumentaries. We've even had Bob Dylan's first drummer on Saturday nights at 6 p.m., replayed Sunday at 4 p.m. You can also follow it at paulmetza.com. The Wall of Power Radio Hour, cool people from all walks of life and all 50 states.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
Common Good Books will help you find the perfect book for all your holiday shopping. There's no better place to find that special gift for the book lover in your life. Pick up a new book or get a gift card at Common Good Books, your locally owned and independent bookseller in the Twin Cities. Whether you're shopping for a child, teen, or adult reader, they'll help you get just the right gift. Find Common Good Books at 38 South Snelling Avenue in St. Paul or at commongoodbooks.com.
At Burger Mo's, Mondays no longer need to be a drag. Dine on the beautiful patio for Burger Monday Madness every Monday after 4 p.m., where you can order any burger and fries off menu for just $6. Not valid on Excel event evenings. Burger Mo's offers 20 fresh, never frozen burger varieties, as well as delicious appetizers, soups, salads, and unburgers, dogs, paninis, shakes, and desserts. Located at 242 West 7th Street in St. Paul, with plenty of free parking, and online at burgermo's.com.
In the process of planning your next event, consider D'Amico Catering. Their team brings extensive experience and knowledge to the table to ensure that your event runs smoothly. With over 20 years of event planning and culinary experience, D'Amico has established their reputation as the Twin Cities' premier caterer. They've been trusted to carry out numerous weddings, corporate functions, and nonprofit fundraisers. D'Amico has the right staff to ensure your event is perfectly executed every time. More at D'AmicoCatering.com.
Brending Electrolysis on Grand Avenue in St. Paul has been a leader in permanent hair removal for people of all skin types and backgrounds for over 30 years, celebrating diversity and priding themselves on finding the right treatment plan for each client's individual needs, regardless of race or gender. Services include electrolysis, body waxing, facials, microneedling, and permanent makeup. Book your 60-minute complimentary consultation, including a 15-minute treatment today, for beautiful, lasting results. Visit BrendingElectrolysis.com.
You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Talking a little bit of national policy today before we get into some local issues during the second half of the show. Earlier, we were speaking with Phil Wolgan. He is the Managing Director for Immigration at the Center for American Progress, talking about the controversy that's taking place at the border with immigrant children getting tear gassed. And then we're also hearing reports of this facility that's basically having workers that are being approved that haven't been properly vetted. All sorts of a mess down there. And we do have some callers on the line that want to talk about immigration. And first up, we got Randy in Coon Rapids. Randy, I knew you were going to talk about this today, and you wanted to talk about how Obama tear gassed immigrants as well. And I will agree, to a degree, he did do this as well, as we were talking about with Phil Wolgan, although it wasn't quite to the degree that the Trump administration was. But because Obama did it, does that validate Trump doing it?
No, I'm not saying that. And I don't think that it was tear gas. The article that I read, they were shooting pepper balls at them. And I think it was maybe
right.
Only about 100 or 200 immigrants that were trying to get in here. The only point I guess I was trying to make is it didn't get a whole lot of news coverage. It didn't make a whole lot of news 5 years ago. Why is it making so much news now? And I'm seeing pictures of these immigrants throwing rocks at our helicopters and stuff down there. And it makes me think, if you had your house, you're having Thanksgiving, and all these people are trying to get, they want to come into your house, and they're throwing rocks at your kids and your family, would you open the door? Well, come on in. Man, you guys are great people. Why don't you come on into our country? Are you sending a bad message that you're throwing rocks and you're showing that kind of aggression towards the country that you want to go into and become a part of? It just, that right there, that tells you these maybe aren't the greatest people. And we don't want everyone, do we?
Are these rocks necessarily posing a threat to anyone? I mean, you have armed guards at the border. They have guns. They have rocks. I would think people with guns would probably win in a confrontation.
Well, they would, but what would you think if there's hundreds or thousands of them and they start bombing all of our military guys down there with rocks? Well, I don't know if you've ever been hit by a rock. That can cause some serious damage, if not death. Would you be opposed to them shooting at them if they were throwing rocks with the intent to do harm?
The thing is, in this situation, is that this was intentionally aggravated to not let them in. When the law is that you have to enter the country to seek asylum, which seeking asylum is legal, but this was intentionally, they knew they were coming and caused this to hold up and created a tense environment so that they would do something and retaliate, so then they would have a reason to not let them enter and pursue their legal right to enter the country to seek asylum.
Well, and granted, they do have a right to, but you got to do it legally. And that's the whole thing that everybody seems to be kind of missing here. It's like,
what if you can't do it legally? What if a certain administration that's in the White House right now has made getting in legally that much tougher when it was already tough in the first place? What if it takes 10 or 20 years?
Your very good question you just posed. That's what we should be addressing. It was tough before. It may be even tougher now. Let's go after the lawmakers and stuff and get this change. Let's not wait till next month or next year. Let's get this change now so that people can come to this country and do it in an orderly fashion and come here and do it legally so they're doing the right thing and we're doing the right thing.
So let
everybody come in here and go, well, just because we don't like the law, we're going to let these guys break it. Let's go after the right people, the ones that are making these laws, and say, you need to change this. a day.
So to at least
wouldn't that be the better way?
So to at least find some common ground between us here, you do agree that the legal immigration process is in desperate need of streamlining, correct?
Gosh, yes.
Okay, good. Wanted to make sure we were clear there. I also want to pose this question on you as well. A lot of these migrants from the so-called caravan are coming from places like Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador, and these are countries that I'm sorry to say, for the most part, we broke, whether it was a Democrat or a Republican in the White House. This goes back to the 30s, the 40s, and even the 20s. We overthrew democratically elected governments and threw these countries into chaos. If it's our fault that we threw these countries into chaos, don't we have some sort of responsibility to maybe help them out if they want to come to this country, if we're the ones that broke it? I mean, I could maybe see from their perspective if it's some country that we had nothing to do with and all of a sudden they want to come here. I can maybe buy that. Well, maybe we should put some extra vetting on that. But what if it's kind of our fault that we actually broke these countries?
Well, I would agree. If we're the ones in there causing the problems, we should do something about it. Now, I don't know if you guys remember or not, but it was many, many, many years ago, and I mean, I don't have all of the facts on it, but it was President Clinton was in office, and I think that was when they were having the big issue in Somalia, and he brought, and that's why we have such a huge Somali immigrants that came here to Minneapolis, because of President Clinton. I remember they were having all kinds of problems there, and I don't know if we're the ones that caused it, but he brought a whole bunch of them here to the United States. And now they're all residents here in Minnesota. Should we be doing something like this in Honduras? By all means, if we're down there causing the problem, we should definitely be doing something to help them. And if we need to get more agents down there to streamline this, but I can't imagine anybody would be against anyone coming to this country that wants, my opinion is if you're coming to this country, you should want to support what we're doing here in this country. Bring your heritage and stuff, but you also got to kind of conform to what we're doing here, because we can't have everyone's country and everyone doing what they did in their country doing it here. You got to have some type of, you know, conforming to what we're doing here. But by all means, bring them here. There's a lot of great people around the world that could come here and do great things in this country.
All right. Hey, Randy, glad we could find some common ground on that. Do appreciate you when you call in. That's what I try to get sometimes when we get some of our more right-wing callers. Find at least some areas of disagreement, or agreement, I should say. We can find plenty of areas of disagreement with Randy in Coon Rapids, but glad we could at least find a few issues we agree with him on. See, I think we can turn Randy there, Hunter, don't you think? Or do you think he's a lost cause? There is hope. Hey, we do have a guest coming up here at the bottom of the hour, but before we get to her, I want to talk to Kelly in Minneapolis. She also wants to talk about immigration as well. Hey there, Kelly.
How you doing, guys? Nice show. When we're talking about the Trump administration, and you just have to look at this, everybody from Betsy DeVos to the other people that he's put in charge of the EPA or whoever, were people who were adversaries of those current, departments before. And the reason that Trump is actually keeping these internment camps, and that's really what they are, going, is because there's a private person behind that, a private company behind that is making that extra money that you're talking about, the 3 to 4 times, a day, what they could be in our regular system. There's money behind it. That's the only place that his administration pays attention.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think you're right. Well, because he is a former, well, corrupt businessman, we should say. Do appreciate the call, Kelly. Unfortunately, we are out of time for callers for at least now on AM 950, but we will have time for open phone lines towards the end of the hour, probably around 4:50 or so. But up next, we have a guest that serves in the Minnesota legislature and wants to talk about gerrymandering and maybe how we can prevent that during the next legislative session. We'll speak with Representative Jen Schultz up next on AM 950.
Hi, it's Tom Hartman for Continental Diamond. You've heard me talk about this place for a long time, and this holiday season, it's time to get your loved one a gift that will last a lifetime. Their experts know all the latest trends and will help you find the perfect gift to fit any budget with an amazing in-stock selection to choose from. Stay away from the craziness of the malls and visit Continental Diamond, adjacent to the West End in St. Louis Park and at ContinentalDiamond.com. That's Continental Diamond for the perfect holiday gift.
Robert Barill here. Looking to add some comedy to your Saturday nights? Tune in to Laughing Matters right here on AM 950 at 7 p.m. to join myself, along with the funniest comedians in the Twin Cities, for an hour of topical social commentary and blatant self-promotion. Laughing Matters is brought to you by Stand Up Records, the recording label of the best comedians in the country, from Doug Stanhope to Hannibal Buress. Visit them online at www.standupcrap.com.
Seward Co-op, serving the community for over 45 years, invites you to shop through two convenient locations. Seward Co-op stores are committed to local producers and food you can feel good about serving your family and guests. Pre-order your holiday meal from Seward, local free-range Ferndale turkeys, handcrafted traditional vegetarian, vegan, and made without gluten sides, perfect for everyone at your holiday gathering. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store at 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop.
It's just a few weeks before winter officially settles in. Is your home ready for the holidays? Now is the perfect time to get your entire home zero-resified by the cleaning heroes at Zero Res. Get three rooms clean starting at just $149. You can also get $50 off your air duct cleaning when you call 952-ZERO-RES, 952-ZERO-RES, or book online anytime at ZeroResMN.com. Zero Res, spell it backward or forward, it spells the same.
Atheists Talk is the radio show for free-thinking Minnesotans. Listen on Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock. Every Sunday, we bring you science, philosophy, politics, and plain old fun from an atheist's point of view. Visit our website at minnesotaatheists.org for more details. Tune in to Atheists Talk Radio Sunday mornings at 9 o'clock on KTNF AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's good radio without the good book.
Victor's 1959 Cafe in South Minneapolis is a locally owned and operated restaurant offering traditional Cuban food. Open for breakfast and lunch daily with dinner Tuesday through Saturday. For night shift workers, Victor's even has both a morning and evening happy hour, and Victor's now accepts dinner reservations too. Stop in and try some delicious, authentic Cuban cuisine like ropa vieja and seafood paella. Make your reservation and learn more at Victor's1959Cafe.com. Victor's 1959 Cafe, revolutionary Cuban cooking.
Most of us try to be careful about how we eat and the safety of our food. At Total Dog Company, we believe in giving our dogs nutritious, safe food, too. We offer a variety of kibble, canned and frozen and dehydrated raw foods. We study ingredient lists of every food we sell, and we don't sell products that are primarily vegetable protein or that contain generic proteins, byproducts, fillers, or artificial preservatives. Find us in New Hope off of 169 at 9432 36th Avenue North and at TotalDogCompany.com.
Hey Minnesota, Norman Goldman here. Catch me live every weeknight from 5 to 8 p.m. right here on AM 950. Whether it's a recap of the day's news, legal analysis, or teaching civics, justice is always served on the Norman Goldman Show. Today on the show, with Thanksgiving behind us and Christmas still ahead of us, we're in that period where crazy things can happen. What's happening now? Join me for 3 live hours of the Norman Goldman Show every weeknight here from 5 to 8 on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for partly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 12. Wednesday, snow with a high near 28. Thursday, cloudy with a high around 34. And Friday, sunny with a high near 39. When buying gifts this holiday season, shop local with one of the AM 950 advertisers. It's a great way to not only support AM 950, but also local businesses and shops. Some of those businesses include the Electric Fetus, Common Good Books, Litton's Party Value, and Ferndale Market. Find a full list of advertisers at AM950radio.com. You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's Brett and Hunter on your Tuesday afternoon here in late November, Giving Tuesday as well, so make sure you give to those charities here today. Want to switch gears, as before we were talking about a more national issue with immigration, I want to go local now and talk about gerrymandering. It is, of course, the end of 2018, we're approaching 2019, and that means redistricting is coming up sooner than we think, right after the 2020 election cycle. Here in Minnesota, we guaranteed that Democrats will, of course, at least have a seat at the table with Tim Walz elected to the governor's mansion, so he will be part of the next redistricting cycle after the 2020 election. But, of course, after 2010, gerrymandering and redistricting became a huge issue as Republicans all over the country kind of built an insurmountable margin for Democrats to overcome in state legislators and, to a degree, also the U.S. House. I would almost make the argument that if we had truly neutral maps, Democrats probably would have won closer to 60 or 70 seats rather than 40 seats. One of the legislatures that's trying to fight back against gerrymandering and get nonpartisan redistricting is Representative Jen Schultz. She is a DFLer from Duluth, and she joins us now on the program. Representative Schultz, thanks so much for joining us today.
No problem. Happy to be here.
Yeah, definitely. I know this isn't the sexiest issue of all time, but I think this is a really important issue because you look at states like Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, Florida, North Carolina. It's basically impossible now to get a Democratic House or a Democratic Senate in those legislators in those states. Now, fortunately, in Minnesota, we had divided government after the 2010 election. We had a Republican House and a Republican Senate, but we did have Democratic Governor Mark Dayton in the governor's mansion, which I believe back in 2010 we bent to the courts redrawing the districts. So this is certainly an underrated issue, and I think people are paying more attention as we head into 2020. Would you agree that redistricting and gerrymandering really plays a big role in politics?
It really does, and you know, it's really led to the polarization of what's happening in D.C., and I want to prevent that from happening in Minnesota. So right now in Minnesota, legislators can draw the district maps, mm-hmm. and many people, including myself, want to take that power away from elected officials and give it to a nonpartisan independent commission to draw the legislative and congressional districts. And so this has gotten broad support in the public in Minnesota and across the country. It's a big issue. People are really getting engaged in learning more about redistricting and gerrymandering. And it's also a way for the state to save money by avoiding costly litigation. So in Wisconsin, they're spending $2 or $4 million just on litigation alone because they've drawn gerrymandered districts.
Now, of course, during the one of the last omnibus bills that Republicans proposed, you offered an amendment to replace redistricting principles in the bill with an independent redistricting commission comprised of 5 retired district or appellate court judges and 4 citizens representing the diversity of the state's population. Now, of course, to me, that seems like an improvement over what we have now with the legislator drawing the district, whether it's DFL or GOP control. But would this also be an improvement over having judges draw the districts when we run into what we normally do when it comes to redistricting in Minnesota, where we have disagreements and then we just send it to the courts?
Yeah, and we've done that ever since 1970. Only one time, I think it was Governor Arnie Carlson that forgot to veto the district maps, and so they were implemented. But they've gone to the court system as a default, and they've drawn the maps. And that's very inefficient and expensive. And so we just want to put in a better process that's more structured and has a lot more public input into commenting on those maps and what principles are important to the public when we do draw the maps. So it is right now the language is that it's 5 judges, 2 picked by the majority party, 2 picked by the minority party, and then those 4 judges pick the 5th judge. And it has to be a majority of a vote. So to try to keep it as bipartisan as possible. And these judges have to be retired. They can't have any history of partisan. And there would be, you know, firewalls between when they're drawing the maps that they can't communicate with elected officials like we did the salary commission. So right now we're strengthening the language and expanding the language that was provided in a bipartisan way by former Vice President Walter Mondale and former Governor Arnie Carlson. So a lot of the structure, there's been bipartisan agreement on redistricting and the format of it, and we're trying to expand that to have more public input right now.
What kind of response have you gotten, especially from the Republican side? Because as I look back at the history of some of these proposals you've made, I'm looking back at a post-bulletin article from down in Rochester. Senator Dave Senjem, who was a Republican from Rochester, says he favored keeping the system the way it is because, well, he basically thought the Supreme Court is the best independent channel and he didn't think there was really an issue right now. What sort of responses are you getting from Republicans and also Democrats?
Well, you know, initially, 4 years ago, even in my own DFL caucus, there wasn't a lot of support for it. But because the public outrage and what's happening nationally, there's been more pressure. So I think people in my caucus are much more in favor of removing our power to draw the district lines and make it a more fair, open process. The Republicans introduced legislation to keep redistricting in the hands of elected officials, to not even allow a discussion about having an independent commission. And really, in some language, they kept it to protect incumbents. That's not the direction we want to go. And it's vital that we have this discussion and bring up this bill and pass reform this session when we won't know who's controlling the legislature in 2022.
What I find kind of interesting with this about why maybe Republicans were in favor of keeping the system as it was is that, well, they, in theory, after the 2018 election, could have had what's called the trifecta of having the governor's mansion, mm-hmm. the state house, and the state senate. Now, of course, they're guaranteed not to have that with Tim Walz in the governor's office, or in fact, we could be looking at a potential DFL trifecta after the 2020 election. Do you think they might be more open to redistricting reform now that they essentially have the trifecta out the window after the 2020 election, since it's impossible for them to get that?
I hope so, but I can never predict what they're going to be in favor of. I mean, if I were them, yes, definitely. They're going to be more open, I think, to having these discussions. And, you know, a couple committees in the House heard my bill as a favor, and we had a tremendous number of people come to testify that we didn't organize, voluntarily organize themselves to come and testify in support of my redistricting bill. So I think that they're going to, they received hundreds of calls when those bills were up in support of my legislation against the Republican versions of those bills. So I think that they're going to feel the pressure from the public to come along and support some sort of reform that takes our power away. We should not be picking the people who vote for us. That's just, it's just wrong. And it's really, it'll strengthen our democracy when we can have redistricting removed. We don't have to worry about gerrymandered districts in Minnesota, and we can have more bipartisan individuals compromising, less polarization. There's a lot of benefits that would happen across the country if every state did this, and we can avoid the problems that other states like Wisconsin have seen in Minnesota if we do this and move forward.
So while technically in Minnesota we don't necessarily have partisan gerrymandering, well, during the current census, or after the 2010 census, I should say, I know judges were able to redraw these districts, and I kind of wonder if they were maybe redrawn in favor of incumbents, because my co-host Hunter and I were talking about a few shows ago how here in the metro area, I know you're up in Duluth, but here in the metro area, we have kind of this weird curve between CD3 and CD5, where a portion of Edina goes into CD3, even though if you were to follow a straight line on the map, it should be in CD5. Do these judges sometimes draw these districts where they maybe they're not necessarily drawn in favor of any particular party, but maybe they're in favor of keeping incumbents in office?
Possibly. I've seen some quirky lines that capture, like mm-hmm. in my own district, I have a line that goes up to North Shore, very narrow, and it's only 5 miles. So it's a very strange appendage on my district. Mm-hmm. If they followed it, the good thing about this bill is we would have set principles there that they would have to follow when they're creating these maps. And we're hoping to get more public input on these principles, but so far they've been very popular to have a guideline that they need to follow when they're drawing these maps and in a priority list. So keeping the districts compact, keeping school districts and municipalities is in one district as much as possible. You know, having tight districts that make sure that there's equal population in every district, that there's minority representation, there's contiguity. So there's a lot of these principles that should be very acceptable to the public and help guide the judges when they're creating these maps. There's so much data out there. We know by census block party affiliation. So it is easy. It just takes a few minutes with this software to gerrymander districts in a way that you can favor one party over the other.
Of course,
so we have to limit what data the judges are able to see and use as well.
Of course, in this upcoming session, we now have a DFL-controlled House, which hopefully will give you a bigger voice at the table in terms of trying to get reform passed. What can people do to stay involved? Because I know as we approach the next legislative session, there's going to be all sorts of important issues out there. But what can people do to stay involved to try to make sure we get reform passed during this upcoming session?
Well, one big organization that's helping advocate for redistricting reform is Common Cause Minnesota. So I would definitely track our legislation going to commoncause.org and looking for the link to Minnesota. We have wonderful people who've organized other groups to stay informed, and they've organized Facebook pages on redistricting. So you could go to Facebook and look up redistricting. Eric Holder has started a group. So there's a lot nationally on the importance of redistricting reform. So to follow our bills, Common Cause would probably be the best organization in Minnesota to track and get information. And they organize people to come and testify at the Capitol and hopefully come and rally in support of redistricting reform. And, you know, they had some really big wins as well in the last election on a ballot initiative. So we're going to see more and more states reforming redistricting.
That's Representative Jen Schultz. She is a DFL legislator from Duluth, and really glad you could join us on the program today. I know this is an issue that sometimes doesn't get a lot of play with a lot of people, but it certainly is very important and something that I hope we can get reformed during the next session. Representative Schultz, thanks so much for joining us on the program today.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Have a great night.
Absolutely. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. If you have any thoughts on what we've been talking about today, whether it's gerrymandering or immigration, give us a call here on AM 950.
Anytime is the right time to update your music collection, so stop in at the Electric Fetus and browse their massive selection. You'll find everything from rock and pop to international and roots, and so much more on CD and vinyl. Not only is Electric Fetus the best stop for music, but they also carry a wide and unique range of gifts. Bath products, clothing, books, stationery, candles, incense, you name it. That's the Electric Fetus at 2000 4th Avenue South in Minneapolis and online at efetus.com.
Hello, humans. This is me, Ellie Krug, with Ellie 2.0 Radio on Monday mornings from 7 to 8 a.m. You've all heard the song Santa Baby by Eartha Kitt. Did you know that Kitt was a big idealist? Or that she wasn't afraid to speak truth to power. I'll tell you more in my next show. Also, I'll give you the skinny on Tom Steyer, billionaire philanthropist who's now pushing the five rights. Ellie 2.0 Radio, engaging and real on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Common Good Books will help you find the perfect book for all your holiday shopping. There's no better place to find that special gift for the book lover in your life. Pick up a new book or get a gift card at Common Good Books, your locally owned and independent bookseller in the Twin Cities. Whether you're shopping for a child, teen, or adult reader, they'll help you get just the right gift. Find Common Good Books at 38 South Snelling Avenue in St. Paul or at commongoodbooks.com.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, Brett and Hunter today. Also be in tomorrow hosting the show here on AM 950. Hope to get a little bit more in depth about immigration and some of the ugly history we've had in terms of regime change in Central America and why it's led to lots of immigrants from that area wanting to come to the United States. And does that lead us to a moral obligation to allow immigrants from those countries to come into the United States since we essentially broke their governments? We'll talk about that more tomorrow on the program when we have a little bit more time. In fact, even hoping we can get a guest who can provide more detail on the But let's get back to some local issues. Did you know, I know Hunter, you're aware of this, that Minnesota had three of the top 10 highest voting turnout districts in the country?
Yep, nice.
Number one was CD3, of course. 73%. That is unbelievable for a midterm election. Yeah. 73% voter turnout. When usually in a midterm, you're happy if it's like 40.
Yeah, people were charged up for this election.
Yeah.
In our district.
And if you say, well, that's because CD3 was competitive, CD2 was competitive, they came in seventh place with a 69% voter turnout. But this one surprised me. CD5 came in at number six with a 69.7% voter turnout rate. And that, of course, was not a competitive congressional race, as Ilhan Omar was pretty much guaranteed to win that. So all over the state, great voter turnout. And also interesting, as I look at these top 10 districts, pretty much all of them are from blue states, except for one district in Florida, of all places. You would think of some of the crazy voting laws, they wouldn't be down there, but wished a few more Floridians would have voted. Floridians, is that what they're called?
Yep.
Yeah, wish a few more of them would have voted so we wouldn't have Rick Scott in the Senate. Mike, why would you elect Rick Scott? I mean, well, I won't even get into that. Rick Scott's been a bad governor, and now, unfortunately, he's going to the Senate. Well, looking at the congressional side, Nancy Pelosi, I believe we are expected to have a vote tomorrow. At least the earliest possible time would be a vote tomorrow on whether Nancy Pelosi is going to return as the Speaker of the House. Now, I was looking at how our Minnesota Congress people are going to vote on Pelosi, and some of them were a little bit coy on their statements. Angie Craig among them, she said, quote, "We don't know who else is running at this point. As soon as those leadership races line up and we know who the candidates are for leadership, I'll make an assessment, and that'll be based on who will best support campaign finance reform and infrastructure investment." So not really a definitive statement from Angie Craig. Dean Phillips, I kind of get the feeling he's actually leaning against voting for Nancy Pelosi. He says he'll work within his own party to choose either Nancy Pelosi or someone else as House Speaker. He says that's his responsibility, and he said from the get-go that he believes it's time for new leadership on both sides of the aisle. I hope to seek that, and he says he is pragmatic. And I believe there's been some other statements from earlier in the campaign saying he was not necessarily thrilled with Pelosi, but I would put him maybe against the lean Pelosi crowd. Ilhan Omar says she is going to vote for Nancy Pelosi. Betty McCollum also in that same category. But this is a guy I was kind of curious about in terms of how he would vote for Nancy Pelosi. That would, of course, be everyone's favorite Democrat, Colin Peterson. And apparently he should be voting for Nancy Pelosi because, according to this article from Roll Call, even though he hasn't made any public statements yet, he's apparently very close with Pelosi. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that he was the ranking Democrat on the Agriculture Committee, and he's in line to be the chair of that committee. So Pelosi's an interesting character, isn't she? That she can have support from both Ilhan Omar and Colin Peterson.
Yeah, I just don't think there's another option.
Yeah.
There are only more conservative options.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. And as I said from the beginning, give the Republicans that boogeyman to chase around. Nancy Pelosi, I would be highly skeptical that she would be on there beyond about 2020 or 2022. Brett and Hunter on AM 950. We'll catch you tomorrow.